What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Seven Figure Flipping Podcast. This is Bill Allen. On today's show, I have a returning guest. He's one of our runway members, absolutely incredible guy. He's got seven kids, seven. Oh my gosh. And he's in Springfield, Missouri, has a great story. Today, we're talking about how he found deals, how he found properties without spending any money. He's getting all of his deals with no money. It seems to be a trend right now. So six deals last year, 12 deals is the goal this year. He's doing an awesome job. And we talked about struggling. We talked about mindset. We talked about all kinds of stuff, tactics, how you can use bird dogs to find your deals for $0. Awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. Really excited about today's show. So I'm going to cue the theme music and then jump in.
My name is Bill Allen, and I'm the leader of a group of elite house flippers and wholesalers called Seven Figure Flipping. We don't brag or show off our success, but instead let integrity and stewardship be our guide. We are dedicated to helping people unlock the freedom they desperately need. If you ask other real estate investors, they will say to keep your secrets quiet. But we believe in abundance, not scarcity, and that's why we are the elite. We are Seven Figure Flipping, and this podcast is our playbook.
Everybody, I am back with an amazing show today. I've got a good friend of mine and somebody who's been in the program for a few years now, brings his son, Cruz, to like all the events. He's one of my favorite little dudes that comes to all the events. It's so fun. Got a lot more kids than just that. He's been on the podcast before, but I found out that he's closed six deals with no money down. So we're going to talk about that today specifically. I've got Colby Vallejo on the podcast today. Colby, what's up? Can you give everybody a quick background? And what we'll do is we'll put your previous podcast in the show notes because it's got a lot of like details about you, how you got started, all that stuff. And then that way we can kind of give them the cliff notes now and we'll jump right into the how did you do that?
Right on. Yeah, so my name's Colby. Me and my beautiful wife, Kristen, live in Springfield, Missouri. That's our market. Got seven wonderful children. And we got into flip hacking live and joined 7FF there. And, it's kind of just been a real estate whirlwind ever since then. We've just been learning all we can and, jumping in with both feet. And so last year was our first full year in, and, we were wholesaling. And so this year we're trying to do some wholesaling and probably some buy and hold stuff too. So that's us in a nutshell, the Vallejo Circus.
So give me the numbers last year. You jumped in 2023. What'd you do? And what does this year look like so far? That might help.
So we jumped in at flip hacking. Like I said, we had like 3 or 4 months that we were just kind of like stagnant while we were trying to get things set up and figuring out exactly what we were going to do and what the processes might look like and just trying to take in all the information we could at that point. And then we got our first deal, like I said, 4 months after that. And then last year we did six wholesales, took them to close. And this year we're trying to do double that. Is our goal for right now. And I'd like to do some buy and holds along the way. So, it was a really good first year in my opinion, especially with the market doing kind of crazy things. So I was content with where we landed last year. So.
Awesome. So six deals last year and then trying to do 12 this year and adding in some buy and holds, buying some rentals. And do you work full time still?
I do.
What do you do?
I'm a welder.
Got it. Does it provide you a lot of time to do real estate? How does that work for kind of your side hustle?
Not generally. My real estate investing time kind of takes evenings and that kind of stuff for now. It's definitely stuff that we just got to kind of work around what we can. If I've got time, I do. And if I don't, I just got to push it off till later.
And is it just you or do you have a team? Is your spouse involved? What does that look like?
So it's just me for right now. My wife is involved a little bit. She tries to help me when she can. But like I said, with the seven kids, she's the mom, she's the teacher, she's the wife. So she's got a lot on her plate and she helps me when she can. But her time to be available is limited for me.
Yeah, homeschooling mom of seven, I can only imagine that's probably a little bit busy, right? Cool. So let's talk about those six deals that you did. Like, what's going on here with, like, what's the strategy like right now? And tell me a little bit about that. Just like, maybe you can introduce it because I don't know a ton. The team just was like, hey, do you know that this is happening? And I was like, no, tell me more. So here you are. Tell me more.
So here I am. So, all of our wholesale deals were either through Driving for Dollars or Bird Dogs. That's how I got the deals brought to me. And then once we locked up the deal and I had it under contract to purchase, I send out info to our buyers. I have a fairly decent size list of buyers, but I have like a cream of the crop list of buyers that I always send kind of first because they're really good to me. And they are really sound buyers, and I know that they're good for it. And so I send them to them. And then what happens is we have a title company here that if we can close both sides of the transaction, the purchase and the sale, in the same day, they don't make me bring gap funding to the table because they close the purchase, like my end buyer closes before my seller does. So they're basically using the purchaser's money to fund the gap. And so they don't make me bring money to the table, especially if it's a really well-known buyer, which all mine are in this area. So that's how they structure that for me. And it's worked out really well because it's allowed us to take down some deals that I didn't have to come up with the gap fund or the full amount to close and then turn around and sell it. So that's been really good for us.
Are you allowed to assign deals in Missouri?
Yes, sir. We can assign deals. I have not done an assignment on any of our deals. Just like everybody's like, as long as everybody's making money, nobody's going to be upset, which sounds well and good until somebody's upset. So it doesn't cost me very much more to double close, and it doesn't cost me a lot of extra time. So all of our deals that we did last year, we double closed just because my end buyers were happy with the price and the product. And so I want to keep them happy. And so we just double closed everything so that everybody was good.
Yeah, it makes sense. I just want to explain this real quick to everybody else that's listening, because we got some new people that'll listen, all kinds of different people. So what we're talking about is assignment is basically Colby puts the house under contract. It's an assignable contract. And then he goes out to his buyers and he sells that contract for a fee. So it could be, you know, 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, it doesn't matter, 100,000, 200,000, million. And he's got an assignment fee that comes to it. And then he can double close it, which means you buy it and then you sell it. So you actually close a transaction, own it for a minute, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, an hour, a day, whatever that is. And then a typical double closing just means like it's a simultaneous close a lot of times. You might hear that where you'll use the buyer's money. So the buyer comes in, funds the transaction, signs the paperwork, and then that they just show a paper transaction effectively, and then you get the difference. Now, in a state like Missouri, what it sounds like is this doesn't cost a lot of money to close the front end of that transaction. But in other states, like let's say you're in New York. New York has really expensive fees and costs and all that stuff. So to double close, you're actually taking, maybe you had a $20,000 assignment fee that might become like $15,000 or $16,000 because you have to double close the transaction. So he's actually paying for the title fees, the title search, all of the costs on the purchase price of the house, and then turning around and selling it to the end buyer. So usually a wholesaler is eating that fee on the purchase, and then the buyer is paying all those fees on the sale. So you could roll it in that, you know, the buyer of the property has to do both ends of the fees if you wanted to, but typically the wholesaler, it's cost a little bit more to double close versus just take an assignment. So that's state by state. It's going to depend on where you are. And then there's other states that are like not wholesaling friendly anymore. That's why I asked specifically about Missouri. And it's requiring people to have like real estate licenses or double close. And all of this kind of stuff is starting to happen. So just kind of think about some of that as you go forward. So, okay, Colby, let's talk a little bit about how you're finding deals. This is interesting. Driving for Dollars or Bird Dogs. Tell me a little bit about that, like what you're doing there. And how you're finding this many deals. You did six deals last year. looking to do 12 deals this year. Like, what is the strategy and what have you seen some success and what kind of advice would you give to others?
So my driving for dollars, because my W-2, I do drive around quite a bit in our town, Springfield. And so that allows me to kind of get eyes around and stuff like that. But my bird dogs, I have started to just reach out to people that I know drive the community, like on a regular basis, like Uber drivers, taxi drivers, mailmen, lawn men, anybody like that, that I know sees the community and all areas of the community, because we're not isolated to just one area of buying. And so I incentivize them to bring me deals. And if I close a deal, I'll pay them a referral kind of thing, and I'll bring them money, and all they have to do is send me an address or a picture. So they're thrilled to death because they got paid because they sent me a text, basically. And if I was to be giving somebody advice, I would say stay persistent and like don't get discouraged, because like it seems like sometimes it's almost like feast or famine. Like you'll get a few deals that start hitting and you'll be like, oh, this is going to be so easy. And then you kind of hit like a dry spell for a little bit. And, sometimes it gets hard to stay motivated to keep on pushing. But if what we found is being persistent has paid off for us. So
who have you found has been the best kind of bird dog in that list of people? And then how do you compensate them?
So the people that I have got the most consistent leads for have been mail carriers, because they literally walk a lot of neighborhoods on foot. And so they see when they walk through the neighborhood and they are putting mail out, they see like, oh, property's vacant. Like, so they know if a property's vacant because it's on their list that this property doesn't have anybody there. So usually what I do is I just earmark their money as marketing fee, just like if I was sending out postcards or doing everything else. And I just take them cash, because that's a good incentive for them. They're like, oh, I don't know. For me, it's worth it to pay them the money and just for sure have a deal, because I'm not paying unless we close. So I'm paying for the lead, but we've already closed at that point.
And how does that conversation go? Let's say I'm a mailman, mail carrier, mail woman, and I'm walking around, and do you just like walk up to them? Like talk me through that whole process.
Oh yeah. So, usually, you know, I just introduce myself and tell them what I'm doing, what I'm looking for. And then I start giving them kind of the things that we're looking for in a property. We're looking for distress. We're looking for not mowed yards. We're looking for the gutters that are falling off the house or boarded up windows, no blinds, and you can see that the place is vacant. Like I just start looking for or telling them all the things we're looking for. And I kind of walk them through. All they need to do for me is just send me a text. I don't need any personal information, because I don't want anybody getting in trouble. Like if they're a postman and they have like sensitive information, like I don't want them giving me anything that could get them in trouble. It's like all I need is an address, and I have them send me a picture of the property so that I can make sure that the address that they sent, like they didn't fat finger it and send me the wrong address on accident. And I can run the picture with the address and make sure that we've got the right place. And then usually when I get to the part about if I buy the house, I'll bring you cash, then they're like, oh, like then they're really interested, you know? So, but it's been pretty good. And I have a lot of people that will stand there and listen, like they're super interested, and then they won't send deals, which is fine. But, I've been talking to some other people about ways that we can change how we kind of, do that and almost keep our bird dogs cataloged almost like a buyer's list, to where we can go ahead and be like, hey, you guys getting any deals? Hey, what's going on? And we can kind of keep in contact with them that way. So we're going to try to start doing a little bit of that and see if that doesn't help.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool, especially if you have somebody that was successful and closed the deal and you sent out like a case study to them and like, hey, this person saw this house, they sent it to me, I did this, and then they got paid X. What are some objections that they have? Like, I'm sure you've gone up to somebody and told them that, and they're like, oh, I'm not doing that. Or That would be a question that I have. Like, have you ever had anybody that said that? And what are their objections usually of like, oh, I can't do that because of X, Y, and Z? And then how much do you pay these people?
So usually they don't ever say like, I can't do it. Usually they like, don't think I'm serious or like I'm a scam or like something like that. Like, there's no way this guy's going to pay me to bring him or send him a text or whatever. And so then I kind of give them like, I just paid a guy $1,000, you know, 2 weeks ago, and I bought a house right over here. And they're like, what? And so that it's not ever that, they say they can't, it's that they don't necessarily believe it's that easy to get paid just to send a picture or a text. And so I tell them every time when I'm talking to somebody, I tell them minimum, I'll bring them $500. If I close a deal, the minimum they're going to get is $500, and it can just go up. If it's a freaking a home run out of the park, like, I don't mind to bring them 1,000, 2,000, whatever, you know? But that's, once I get to that part, they're usually like, oh, okay.
Do you have any pictures, like when you've paid somebody in the past, one of these bird dogs, do you have any pictures with you next to them holding up the money?
I don't, and I've actually thought about using that so that I could show them and use it actually to try to get other bird dogs, like off of social media. Like, look, I just paid this dude. Here's his money. Here's his head. Like, let's go, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. When you were telling me that was an objection, like, I'm always trying to figure out how I solve the objection. So like, I'd be like, oh, hey, well, if you don't believe me, like, here, just look at this. This is so-and-so. Yeah. He's a mail carrier just like you. He sent me this text message and I looked at the property. It took 3 weeks, but I got it closed. And then here's me and him like holding up the cashiers of $500. Oh, then I got Laura here. You know, she was a Uber driver and I met her just like 2 weeks later. She sent me a text message with an address. I called the people, worked on that one. And then here's me with her with $1,000. Oh, here's Ron. He's like, I don't know. He cuts grass, runs a lawn mowing company, and he did this. So like, it's just pure testimony, right?
Absolutely.
And get them to lock up. And then, yeah, I definitely think the backside of that, like managing the process of them bringing leads in and checking on them and stuff like that, that could be really, really powerful. This is exciting. I think you do a lot of cool stuff with this. Then it would be like, how many bird dogs can I get in and how many can I use for this? So I know there's a lot of people doing this. Vaughn has given a presentation on driving for dollars. It was a really great presentation. Were you there for that one?
I was. It was great.
Is that what spawned this, or were you already doing it before you saw his presentation?
No, it was 100% Vaughn at Flip Hacking, because when we started, we were trying to figure out, like, we knew that we felt like we were being called to do something in real estate. It had kind of been intriguing to me and my wife for a while, but we had that common misconception and fear that like, you have to have like hundreds of thousands of dollars to get into this game. And like, I had to be like background in real estate and I had to like have all this stuff that just is 100% not true. And when he started talking about driving for dollars, I was like, I think I can do that like right now. And that's our very first deal, was a driving for dollar that I literally just drove by when I was in town. And I'm like, huh, I took a picture. And when I messaged the guy, he was like, yeah, I absolutely want to sell. And I'm like, huh? Like, it works. So, but yeah, I 100% credit to Vaughn, because I was in that presentation. I thought it was great. And that's exactly what spurred us in that direction.
So what do you think? So you mentioned you thought you had to have a lot of money. You thought you had to know real estate really, really well. You said it's not true. What do you really think kind of like got you to do what you're doing now? Like, what was the turning point? Because I mean, there's got to something that had to happen before you went to Flip Hacking Live, before you saw Vaughn's presentation, like to fly out to Orlando or drive out to Orlando. I think it's probably when we were in Orlando, 2022. And something had to happen. What was that happened that kind of triggered you to say, all right, let's do this. Like, you have a calling to do it. You're kind of tugged to do it a little bit. Let's go back. What was that thing? Because I think there's a lot of people that are still sitting on the sidelines trying to get off and can't figure out how to get off the sidelines and get in the game.
So what happened for us is, me and my wife have been talking about having rentals and getting into real estate for probably 2 years prior to us going to flip hacking. And, but like I said, I didn't know what a wholesaler was. Like, obviously I knew what a flipper was and that kind of stuff, but there was just so many things that I was not even aware existed. And my father-in-law, Chris, was part of the local RIA here in Springfield, and his friend puts it on, and it's a pretty big group of people. And he was like, hey, why don't you come to this RIA? You know, the first time's free. Cause I was like, I'm not spending money to go to a meeting kind of thing. And, so we went to this meeting, and they had like a beginner's group, and then they had like a regular meeting. And I was like, let's check it out and see what it's like. And, we went and met a lot of great people, and they were really encouraging to us. And they're like, oh, I do this, you know, I did it for a few years and then I quit my job, or I do this on the side or whatever. And I'm like, started asking them like, well, did you like have a real estate license? Did you have like a bunch of, like, is your family rich? Like what? And so then we started getting into this, and I actually met a guy at the RIA group that had been to a Flip Hacking Live in the past. And he said, dude, if you're thinking about doing real estate investing, you have to go to this conference. It's like the biggest thing ever. It's awesome. You have to go. And so I talked to my wife and I'm like, look, it's not cheap. It's a big trip. We're going to stay in a fancy hotel and do all this stuff. But if we're going to go and commit to this, I feel like this is what's going to tell us, like, do we really want to do this or not? And we went to Flip Hacking Live just to kind of see what was out there. And all of the presenters brought fire, and I mean, just blew us out of the water. And we got to the last day, and my wife's like, I think we need to be a part of the seven-figure community, because these people are bringing so much value that we realistically needed because we didn't have it prior. And so we were like, this is something that we really need to get involved in. And once we got in the group and started really digging into the material and people pouring out into us and just that abundance mindset and the money mindset, they started preaching at us about, and it really just changed our way of looking at things. And from there, we just kind of stomped on the gas and held on and hoped for the best. And it actually worked out for us. So.
All right, I got a really important question follow up from that. Who watched the seven kids while you guys were in Orlando?
So at that point, we only had six, but my mother watched all of our children for us. Shout out to mom. Like, you got to give the hi, mom. but yeah, so my mom watched our kids, and it was a commitment from the whole family. Like I said, my mom watched the kids for us for almost a full week, because by the time we like fly up the day before and do and that. And so like she had our kids for days, and that was the longest time that we had ever been apart from the kids. And like I said, the financial obligation to go was significant for us, because we didn't just have a ton of money laying around to just blow on a trip, because we're not those kind of people. We just like kind of save and hoard our money. That had been our mindset up to that point. And that really changed our view of things. Like, we need to invest in ourselves if we're going to go further, and we need to, you've said it before, we need to buy speed, because we could learn all this stuff on YouTube or wherever, but how many years is it going to take me to get a deal if I'm trying to watch some jack wagon on YouTube that like kind of knows what he's doing sort of or whatever? And so we just fully committed and said we're going to do seven figure for a year, and if it works, great, and if it doesn't, it was a learning experience and we'll just move on. But it worked, so great.
Man, I'm a jack wagon on YouTube. That's messed up, man.
But you know what you're doing.
Well, I'm glad it worked out for you guys. Yeah. Sometimes. Usually when I try to make a video, I'm talking about something that I've done and I know what I'm doing. You've got something. You did six deals last year. You guys jumped in. It took you 3 or 4 months. We talked about that on the last show. If you want to hear that progression, I think it was an amazing conversation with Colby that I had. So you can go back and listen to that one. We'll put that in the show notes. And then you kind of hit the ground running after that, 6 deals, then planted 12 deals this year, moving to buy and holds. What do you think that you have that other people don't have? So I see people come into the program and they don't necessarily, you know, have success. You know, not everybody that comes in has success. I'll be the first one to say that. And there's probably not a lot of other people out there that will say that on their own podcast about their own program. Not everybody has like hits a home run in our group. Like people come in, they struggle, they kind of quit on themselves. Like, you know, it's, and all the information is there. All the coaches are there. We're there. The accountability groups are there. The events are there. And it's like, they just kind of come in and then they just disappear over a period of time. What do you think is different in you and the people that are successful in a program like this? And what separates you from those other people?
So the first thing that I can't take credit for is I'm extremely blessed that God's involved in our life and in our business. And so I feel like, yeah, I've been hustling to get deals and stuff, but I definitely feel like the Lord has blessed me and my family with what we have and how we did our first year. On me specifically, I'm always trying to be better than I was a couple of days ago. Like I'm always trying to learn more and get better. And I have a really good driver because my kids are my incentive. You know, one day if I got $100 million, that's great. But like what I really want is time with my kids, and I want them to be set up in the future to do whatever they want. If they want to have a 9-to-5 because they love that job and that's their passion, I absolutely want them to do that. If they want to be investors or anything else, I want them to absolutely succeed. And so what I try to do is provide them with all the things that they could possibly need to get them wherever they want to go, wherever their end goal is. And so that's my, I don't ever want to fail at what I'm trying to do, because I feel like if I fail on my own, I'm not just quitting for me, I'm quitting for all 7 of them and for my wife. So, but that's my motivation, is to make sure that I'm setting my kids up for success in the future.
That's awesome. I think both of those are great reasons and something that you stand apart from you and somebody else. What do you think the best way to use the program is? Like you join Runway, what would you advise people, somebody who's just like you, hadn't done a deal, getting going? Like what's the best advice you can give there?
When you first join Runway, it's going to seem really overwhelming. And most of that was just in my head. Like I thought, oh, I don't know if I could do this. Even after we joined, I'm like, man, this is a lot. I don't understand what all this stuff means. And there's forms and contracts and assignments. And I'm like, I don't even know what this stuff means. And so it just seemed really overwhelming. But getting on coaching calls was huge, because they're not salespeople. They're not whatever. Like they're literally people that want to see you succeed. And one of my very first coaches was Ron Angel. And when I saw him a year later at the next Flip Packing Live and you asked me to be on stage, he was like, man, it was like a proud dad moment, because I remember our first coaching call and you were like panicking, and he's like, and now you're on stage and you did great. And so like these people that are on the coaching calls and the laser coaches, like they genuinely want to see you succeed. Like their skin in the game is not monetary. It's they want to see you win. And I 100% believe that when they're in there and they're giving you advice and they're telling you what to do. And I'm not going to lie, I had some uncomfortable coaching calls because they were encouraging me to do things that were still out of my comfort zone. Like, I'm like, man, I'm not there yet. And he's like, do it. And I'm like, I don't know if I can. And so it was uncomfortable a couple of times because I didn't feel like I was ready. And I was just like, you know what? I got the program. I committed to it. I need to try this stuff, because if I'm not going to do what they're telling me, like there's no point in being involved in this, because I could not do stuff on my own. So if they're giving me advice to do something, I need to do it.
Yeah, that's great. I totally agree. The one thing that I see, even just hear from you right now, is you're really humble. You're like, you don't think that you know everything. Like you actually came in saying, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing. I'm here to learn. And you took the time. We talked about on the previous show, you took a couple months to kind of learn, understand the, you know, build the foundation, build the groundwork so that you're ready. And I think a lot of people come in thinking they know a lot more than they do. And I'm guilty of that a lot. I think that I know some stuff and I get around some other people that actually know stuff. And then I'm like, well, I mean, I already know that. And you kind of turn your ears off and you turn your eyes off to it. And you think that you already know something. I think you were a very much a sponge and willing to almost like a ball of clay where you're like willing to be molded and just totally open to like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. And willing to take that kind of feedback from the coaches, willing to jump in there and be a little vulnerable, willing to share some of the things that you're feeling uncomfortable and struggling with, where I think some people are a little bit too proud for that a lot. And I think that gets in their way. And it's gotten in my way many times as I've, you know, a lot of things that I've done. I want to win too, where I think we're very similar in that, right? I'm going to give everything that I got. I want to win. I'm going to work hard. But there's times where I might come into something being like, oh, I kind of know that stuff. Or, oh, you read a book about it. Like if you read a book about it, you listen to a podcast about it, you read it on a forum, you watch a YouTube video about it, you are not a man or a woman with an experience. You're a man or a woman with, I don't know, maybe you like have heard about somebody else's experience. And so you want to become a person of experience. And the only way that we become a person with an experience is we take some information and some guidance and we go out there and do it. We actually have to do it. We have to practice it. We have to get in the game. We have to actually play in real life. And that's the cool thing that I've seen in you and many other people is willing to put yourself out there and okay with not knowing something or being wrong or jumping out there and just taking one step at a time, not figuring out A to Z and go. There's a lot of times you're like, I mean, we did a simulator hot seat at one of the events and you're just like, we found some gaps in your kind of understanding and knowledge. You're just like, I never even thought about that. Like I hadn't had to do that yet. I'm basically just hitting the singles and doubles that I know how to hit. And like, I'm not hitting the knuckleball yet. It's just not something I've had to figure out. And so it's been really cool to watch you. And I think that's a huge piece of advice that I give to anybody listening is to be humble, just, you know, leave the ego at the door. And when you come to a place like this or an event or into a group like this, it's like, hey, there's a lot to learn and there's a lot to grow. And if you come in thinking that you know everything and turn all the wisdom off, it's not going to be too good. And so I go to a mastermind meeting next week that I've never been in this group before. I'm a little bit uncomfortable. I know that there's going to be people there that are doing way more than me. And I think I'm kind of good at what I do, but I'm going to go in there and I'm taking this advice myself. I'm going to have to walk in there like the no chip, just who are you? What do you do? What can I learn from you? Let me listen. I'm going to take pages and pages of notes. I'm going to implement some of the things that I learn and I'm not there to brag. I'm there to learn, you know? And I think that's really important. So I don't know. I've been talking for a while. Anything on those things?
No, I agree with you 100%. I try to surround myself with people and it's never been a goal of mine intentionally until the last couple of years. And now I always try to surround myself with people that are doing more than I am because kind of like the hot seat thing, like they've already been through some things that I've never even encountered yet. And so when they're like, oh, I would handle that like this. And I'm like, whoa, I've never even heard of that. And they're like, oh yeah, I've done it several times and this is how we handled it. And I'm just like, man, that's crazy. And it's just something because we haven't ever crossed it. If I got a phone call and had that conversation with somebody else and I hadn't talked to that other investor, I would be like, oh, I'm gonna have to call you back. I don't know what to do, you know? And the more you get around people that have been more experienced and turned more reps than you have, the more that you learn. And it's not my experience, it's somebody else's, but I know at least how they addressed it and what direction I want to try to get the situation.
I love it. What's the best piece of advice you would give to somebody who's just getting started?
Oh man. Best piece of advice. I would have to say, when you commit, don't lose your passion. Like run the course and Make sure that you're committed while you're trying to run the course. If it ends up being something that's not a good fit for you, make sure that you didn't quit. You didn't figure that out because you didn't try hard enough. Make sure you go ahead and put in all the effort and everything and then be like, look, it wasn't my cup of tea because, but it wasn't because you were just like sort of trying and it just didn't work out. Because I feel like in this world of investors and people, I feel like there's a lot of people that like kind of try and I see like a lot of potential in them and they could probably do a lot more, but they just, I don't feel like they're putting forth the amount of effort to get the results that they desire, but they're just totally fine with being like, I just want to do like one house a year. And so they're totally fine with that. But I feel like that a lot of people just don't try because they're like, well, I'm just not sure. And so they just don't give it a good effort and they just quit too soon, I think. And honestly, excuse me, when we finally got our first deal, me and my wife were very, very close to that same exact point. And I talked on that a little bit on our first podcast. Like, we were like, man, I don't know if this is going to work. This is costing us a lot of money. We're not making any money. I'm not sure. And so, but we were just like, look, this is what we say we want to do for our family and for our kids and for our future. And so we just kept on pushing. And that was, I mean, it wasn't 30 days after that conversation with me and my wife had, we had a contract and I already had it assigned and we were closing a deal a couple weeks after that. So, definitely don't be scared to push for, it's your dream, right? Like you made up your mind, you want to do this. So don't quit on your own dream. If it's not something that somebody's pushing on you and you're like, I want to do this, don't quit on yourself. Continue on your course because that's what you said you wanted. So don't give up. Keep going.
Yeah, man. I remember the second house that I was doing in Pensacola. I just moved from Southern Maryland down to Pensacola. I had flipped one house and I had a couple rental houses. And I remember I was just like two, three months looking for a house, making a couple offers, send out a couple mailers here and there, just kind of like dabbling, saying like, oh, I got to find my next flip. I had done one before that. And I was about to quit. I was almost ready to quit. Like I'd done one. I was like, oh, it's a fluke. Like it's too much work. It's kind of hard. I mean, I literally was probably making like an offer every 2 weeks, maybe one a month. And I was sending out like 100 cards a week or something and expecting like so many people to call me. And I was like, oh, this doesn't work, you know? And just pulled into an estate sale. And I had heard that somebody has bought a house in an estate sale on a podcast at some point, and I just rolled in there in my flight suit and started talking to the guy. And his mom was there and his dad had just passed away and he was there with his son and they were planning on moving his mom somewhere else, like up to Ohio with them. And they were cleaning up the house and selling all the stuff. And I was just like, hey, you know, I buy houses. I'd be interested in making an offer. And sure enough, I got to buy that house, flip it, and, you know, did really well. And that was the next catalyst of two in a row. I was like, okay, this is doable. Like I can really do this now. What if I could do 12? But I almost quit. Like I still remember that. I was like, I remember pulling into that driveway. Like if this doesn't work, I'm it. I'm out. And it's kind of like, you know, you mentioned God. It's like, all right, God, if you don't answer my prayer, that's it. Like I'm doing something different. Like you're not even listening to me. Those kind of things. I felt like that, you know? And then you just went, and I was so nervous walking into that house. Oh my gosh. I remember like browsing around, like I'm buying something, looking at the books. I ended up buying a couple books before I like mustered up the courage to talk to them. Like I bought like four books. I was like, okay, if I spend enough money, maybe they'll talk to me. And so it was just like, and I used the book to open the conversation. I was like, you know, it was a Navy Blue Jacket manual. So I was asking if he was in the Navy. And so, you know, I was in my flight suit. It was just, I just still remember it like it was yesterday. This was 2013. And it's like 11 years ago, kind of the spark of, you know, what happened. And it's very much, you have those moments of like almost quitting. So I would encourage anybody who's listening, like we talked about an experience, like be somebody who creates the experience, be somebody who goes out there and takes a little bit of action, even if it's just you know, walking a house, calling somebody, knocking on a door, driving into that estate sale and saying, hey, would you be interested in selling the house? If they're like, yeah. Like, so I set up an appointment for another day and I was like, I don't even know what this house is worth. Like, I have no idea. And, you know, I didn't have a group of people around me. I was at church this weekend and there's a quote. While we were talking about being somebody of an experience, I looked this up because the pastor was talking about doubt and that no one else can have an encounter with Jesus other than you. So like, you can't tell somebody else about an encounter. You have to have it. Like, you have to be somebody with an experience. And there's this quote by, I had to look it up, Leonard Ravenhill. And it says, a man with an experience of God is never at mercy of a man with an argument. And it just made me think while I was in there on Sunday that when I was learning about real estate, I was listening to all these other people with their experiences. I was listening to all these other people that were making money. I was reading all these forums. I was listening to all these podcasts. I was reading all these books. And I had to become a man with an experience, not somebody with an argument, not somebody who said, oh, like, I can't do it, or you can't do it, or anybody can't do it, or even, oh, like, must be nice if I'm sure that I could have one day, maybe, or like, you know, just like learning about it and just living through someone else. Like, you have to become a man or a woman with an experience, with, in this case, with God, but in real estate, in life, in anything that we're doing. And they went on to talk about our devices and our kids these days, and that the fact that our kids are going to be potentially and likely the first generation of people, of human beings, our kids, the first generation of human beings that die with more memories of other people's lives than their own, because they spend so much time on their phones and watching YouTube and all of this stuff that they're not out there making their own memories. They're actually living through other people's eyes. And so I would encourage you to get off of the sidelines right now and get into the game and create your own experiences. Be somebody who is creating memories, creating experiences, creating growth for you and your family instead of sitting on the sidelines. And this is like the biggest push that I've, like, that. He said, these kids will die with more of other people's memories. I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is so, he's right. I was like, you're so right. Like, we have to become a man or a woman of experience. So, get out there, get started. Biggest piece of advice I can give you is to just go create an experience, even if it's a bad one in the beginning. Like, just go. If you want this, if it's something that you're interested in, please get off the sidelines. I just interviewed another guy today who was listening to the podcast for like 6 years before he jumped in, before he came to an event, before he joined our runway program. And I'm not even talking about you have to join the runway program. I'm just talking about going out there and doing what you want to do. Like, it's inside of you. If you've been listening to this show for long enough, you might be dabbling, you're kind of on the outskirts, you're thinking about jumping in, but it seems risky, or you're not sure, or, oh, it's not the right time, or, oh, the election's coming up, or, oh, I heard the market's down, or my friend told me to not get in real estate, or my parents are going to be upset because I'm going to start doing this. Like, okay, like, all of that stuff. Great, 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 great. I'm sure you've heard that in lots of other parts of your life. Like, nobody is going to support you 100% all the time. Find the people that do support you, find the people that are in the game, and figure out how you can play too. So, Colby, what do you think about all that?
I'm sitting here the whole time that you're talking, just shaking my head, because that has been one of our, I've heard all those things. And I thought a lot of those things, like, my family's going to be mad. Like, they're going to think, you know, what am I doing making money, or this is risky, or the, like you said, the election's coming, interest rates are terrible. Like, I've heard it all. But I wanted to circle back to your kids comment, because like you said at the beginning, my boy Cruz has been to a lot of meetings with me. And we very, very strongly push our kids to strive for excellence and not sit in front of devices all day long. And Cruz he just turned 10, and his little brother is 7. After we got in this group and we started like pursuing entrepreneurship and like changing the money mindset of our family and generational wealth and all these things, like, he hears a lot of that stuff, and so he's exposed to that. And they wanted to start a lawn business. Back years ago, me and my grandfather had a lawn business, and we mowed and did landscaping and all this stuff. And so I still had the big mowers, and they started a lawn business last year, and they mow for a lot of investors, actually, because like the house is on the market, we need somebody to mow. And Jason Ross is one of them, actually. But that was something that they wanted to do. And so now they get money and they have work ethic and they're out there and they've got like their little bros mowing shirts because they like want merch, you know? And so like they're legit. And you don't realize how much they soak up of what you're doing until the other day. This happened last night. Croy is my 7-year-old and my boys ride dirt bikes and stuff like that. And Croy wanted different plastics for his dirt bike because he wanted a different color. But he's already blown through his money from last summer and he didn't have it. Well, Cruz is the little saver guy. He's got his money still. So Cruz is like, Croy said, how much are plastics? And he's like, I don't know, like $60, I think. He goes, well, ask Dad. And he goes, I told him that Cruz told Croy, he goes, I'll loan you the $60. I'll buy the plastics for you until we mow. And then once we start mowing, you owe me 70. And I just started laughing. And he goes, hey, Dad, I'm an investor. And like, he just turned 10. Like, but it's just like, he's learned that stuff from being exposed to people and going to these RIA meetings and coming to the 7-figure meetings and the runway meetings. Like, he's 10 and he's already got more, he's been exposed to more knowledge than some adults have because of the rooms I put him in. And I hope that one day he realizes that. But like I said, just the things that they do now that most little 7-year-olds and 10-year-olds are not going to go out in the 100-degree weather and mow yards because they would rather sit in the air condition and just chill. And like my boys hustle and they take pride in that. And it's been something that they're happy to share with people that they do. And when they're done, they're like, this is what we do, that we have a business, you know, and they take pride in that. And so I 100% agree with what that guy is saying. And we're trying to very much not, we try to create our memories in this family as much as possible and get them exposure and making their own memories instead of following other people.
Well, I think that's something I'm most proud of is attracting and bringing in the right families, the right character in people, and bringing this group together with all like-minded people that all want our families to get better. We want to actually produce for society, not take from society. We want to leave something better than we found it. We want to grow our kids into great members of society who have a better life than we did when we were kids. And it's just, it's really, it's been wild to watch. Like I've really, really enjoyed it. And I think a lot of our members are seeing those things. Our kids are watching us very closely and they're seeing, as we're growing and we're developing and we're investing ourselves, our kids are watching that and they're on board with doing that. So exactly what I see in your son, Cruz, I'm seeing all over our Teenage Tycoon program, like all the kids that are in there. That example that you gave is like, I created a video. We have video course for the kids in Teenage Tycoon. And I was, it was almost word for word what I was teaching. It was like, this kid wanted this, and it was like a $100 loan for them, and they would pay $10 extra. So I'm talking about like term and the interest rate and all that stuff, like a balloon payment or a monthly payment. And it was like $60, and they got 70 on the back end. I was like, he's been watching my videos. So it's so cool to hear that they're learning this stuff and they're watching us. Like that's just straight, man, just straight osmosis, basically. They're at the event with us. He's coming to the events, which I think is so cool that you bring him. And so many more kids are infiltrating our community and being in there, so much so that we created another program for them specifically in the families about money. And that's just total like mission fulfillment on my part to see that happening. It's really, really cool. And you're championing that by bringing your young boy to the events and encouraging other parents to do the same. And it's just been really cool to watch. I mean, we just started planning our kids event for June. We have one that we'll be talking about and launching an event for families in June here in Nashville. That's going to be really fun and exciting about money for kids. And it's so cool. And this is it. It's you being a man with an experience and then your son going out, your kids, your boys going out and creating experiences as well because they see what dad's doing. And they see you, like I remember growing up seeing my dad create his own business in the basement. And what I saw and what I remember is struggle, not being home as much, my mom complaining about his, him falling asleep when he gets home, not being around as much, being late from work all the time, those kind of things. But what he created was something magical. It just took a really long time. And I vowed when my kids were born that I could create something that I would be around more when they're young. And so it's cool to watch you do that, especially how hard you're working in your full-time job and then as well in this game. So how can people find out more information about you if they want to get in contact? And then what do you need? Do you need something in the area? You need more buyers? You need more bird dogs? Like, just think about who's listening to this show. How can we help you?
You could find me on Facebook, Colby Vallejo. We have CV8properties.com. And I'm always looking for more bird dogs. We always are looking for people. I'll always add buyers. I have really good buyers now, but you can never have too many buyers, I don't think. So if you're in the Springfield area and you are looking to buy, you know, shoot me an email or get on our website and contact me that way. My number's on there. But yeah, bird dogs. And, you know, I just wanted to take, well, we got just 2 seconds here. I wanted to thank you personally for pouring out your heart and soul into not just the adults in the group, but also the kids, because a lot of groups and things like that, they would discourage a kid because a kid might be a little bit of a distraction now and then, or need to get up and leave the room or whatever. And like, you and everybody in the group are 180 of that. Everybody wants to see the kids there and they want them. So thank you for pushing that in our group and in our society of real estate investors and everything, because I definitely feel like we might not be able to change the whole world, but we could change a lot of it, you know? So I appreciate what you're doing and your passion that you've shared with everybody else and making that such a big focus.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you guys didn't bring the kids, I wouldn't have thought of it, I don't think, until mine got a little bit older. My kids were young. But I mean, come on, Cruz sits front row. He's quiet. He takes notes. I mean, I think there's a lot of parents that can learn some manners from that young man. So it's really awesome to see. And it's a good example, you know, and it really it's, so you're welcome, first of all, let me say that. And I appreciate everybody else that comes to the events, keeping it clean so we can have the kids around, you know? And I think that's it. We just, you know, attract people that are very family friendly and, they want everybody to grow, and a bunch of go givers, like just true go givers. And when the kids started showing up, it was like, whoa, like this is wild. I didn't think these kids would be that into this real estate investing thing. And then we got 13-year-olds flipping houses. It's like, what's happening here? This is incredible. So, I mean, Cruz is going to probably be a millionaire before he turns 18. I'm interested to watch. So, you know, 8 years, not too long. So, yeah. And he's got plenty of time to make some things happen. So, Colby, I appreciate you. And if you're listening to this and you want to be a part of what we're doing, you want to come to our next event. We got an event coming up on May 1st and 2nd for our altitude program, and third and fourth for our runway group. And we just got an amazing group here. So you can go to 7figurerunway.com. So the number 7figurerunway.com, and fill out an application. Even if you're a high level investor, you've been flipping houses for years and you're not sure where you fit, just fill out an application there. And then you can talk to my team. We're not high pressure salespeople, really just kind of understand where you're at, what you're looking to do, what your goals are, and then figure out how we can help. And if it's a good fit, if it works for you, if you know, your money's right, you got everything ready to go and it makes sense for you to join, we're going to invite you in. If not, we might say, hey, you know, stick with the podcast for a little bit longer, or, you know, hey, check out this course or buy this book, you know, and that's it. And so, we'll just kind of see where you're at, and we'd love for you to be a part of it. Like, we spend a lot of time making the show and motivating you to get off the sideline and being somebody with an experience. Well, be somebody that just has an experience talking to my team. And I guarantee it will be a consultation. We'll figure out where you are. We'll figure out where you want to go. And we'll try to draw the map for you right along with you to see if runway is right for you. Maybe altitude's right for you. Maybe waiting a little bit is right for you. So just, you know, let us be a guide on that journey. So you can go to 7figurerunway.com, the number 7figurerunway.com. It's links in the show notes. And I'll see you on the next show. And hopefully I see you at the May event. Colby, thanks for being here. I had a great time. As always, it was awesome talking to you. And I'm excited for you, man. I hope you hit those 12 houses this year. I hope you buy a ton of rental properties. You become a multimillionaire so you can serve those kids. You need at least 7 rental houses because you're going to have 7 kids that need to live somewhere in a short period of time. So thanks for being here, man. And I'll see you guys in the next show. Bye.
That's the goal. Thanks, buddy.